Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as... Sober... Sober... Sober as...
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this show, I have Yahi. Yahi is from the band Twin Flames. He is Inuk from Kwaktuk Nunavik in northern Quebec, and also Mohawk from Kahnawake. Twin Flames is a multi-award-winning, chart-topping Indigenous band, which consists of Yahi and his wife Chelsea June. Yahi has been sober for 8 years. And on this show, Yahi courageously shares his story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Yahi. Hi Yahi, how are you?
I'm very good, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. Can you go ahead and kind of just introduce yourself so everybody can get to know you?
Okay, perfect. My name is Yahi. I'm from the band called Twin Flames. I am Inuk from northern Quebec, a little place called Kwaktuk, which means to freeze. We've had the pleasure of meeting a few Alaskans this summer, and we were able to have some communications, and they were able to understand some of the stuff that I was saying, and vice versa. So for you Inuhatiks, Atsune. And I'm also Mohawk, which is on the Indigenous side, or the Native American if I were to live in the States.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's see. Okay, so Chelsea said writing songs is her way of expressing herself and healing not only herself, but generations before her. That is a really big, really good statement, you know, because it goes into kind of the generational trauma, you know?
Definitely.
And do you feel that same way when you write music? Do you feel a sense of healing?
I think so. I think music is something that has been a medium for when we go through a certain theme in our life, we often... relate with music that's playing, or we have a playlist that plays every time we feel a certain way. So I think that kind of transcends from the actual moment that that person that is writing that song feels. And I think it becomes this common thread throughout the world. I think for myself, my first source is always the guitar. I pick up the guitar when I'm feeling a certain way. I just kind of, it feels like I resonate with the melody that's playing in my head, and it often just ends up choosing how it wants to come out. And lyrics for me come usually after. It's as if the guitar or the music just wants to come out in words from the sound.
So you were born in Kwaktuk in northern Nunavik.
I was born in Lachine, which is once upon a time. I think Jacques Cartier thought he was sailing to China, but he ended up in Montreal. But I guess he had a bad compass. In the end. He was one of those explorers that decided to name it Lachine, because
I think he wanted to save face, completely opposite direction.
Yeah.
I was born in Lachine. I went up north to go be with my biological grandparents, about 18 months old, and my bio mom, a residential school survivor, she was not ready to have any kids. She left me with my grandparents, and I was raised up there ever since.
Oh, so you were raised in Gwakdak?
Yes.
Okay. So you guys are, you know, advocates for, you know, mental health and sober living. How did that come about? How did you decide to be advocating for these issues like mental health and sobriety?
Back in another life, I was a policeman. I was a policeman for 12 years, and we had our own police force in my region in northern Quebec, the only Inuit police force. It was something that I felt really proud to be able to say I did, and I wanted to help my people. I wanted to help. It's something that I wanted to be since I was a young boy, and unfortunately, politics got in the way, and I felt like my position was something of a standstill where it didn't seem like policing was done for the right reasons within our departments, and so I requested a demotion, refused a promotion by doing so, but I wanted to go back to my home community because my mother had passed away, my grandmother. And so they said no. And I said, you guys are going backwards. I'm sorry. I decided to stop. I decided to just leave what I did. I think in that sense, over the years, I wasn't really doing music. I think I kind of ended up re-picking up the guitar when I was 35. And it was more of an excuse for me to drink, to party. I was still going through a lot of trauma. I had nearly lost a son to an accident. And it was, with everything built up, everything that I was going through since I was a child, drinking for me was that release, that escape. And I felt like the turmoil was just growing and growing and spiraling deeper and deeper. And it became out of control to the point where when I started to become popular, I was more into the drinking than the actual music. My aha moment was, I'm singing my song. I'm up on stage, half inebriated. And I'm seeing people sing my songs word for word as I'm ad-libbing, because I never took the time to actually know my own songs. I just recorded them and released them. And it made people feel uncomfortable, as if they were singing the wrong notes or singing the wrong lines. And I think after having a mild alcohol poisoning, I said, this is going nowhere. I decided to stop. You know, with that life and everything that we were writing about, everybody that was messaging us and saying, your music is saving my life, your music, you know, it stopped me from hurting myself. And I really thank you for that. And I started feeling very embarrassed, I would say, that people were looking up to me, but all this time I was spiraling down right with them. And it felt like a lie. So I decided to quit drinking, and that was 8 years ago.
Wow.
And that was the first summer of music. And after that, I mean, with just the history of our people, unfortunately, still suffering. You know, I've had family members, unfortunately, end their lives, and my little brother was one of them. You know, the amount of hurt that my mother went through, my grandmother, right to her dying bed, it was something that I felt very responsible for as a person. And if I could have a platform that could help people,
music being that medium, as we discussed in the beginning of this podcast, you know, it's almost medicinal, because our people went through these things. Our people went through ceremonies and played the drum and done the ayayas and what have you, to feel better. And today we obviously modernized it with Western instruments and still adding some tradition. It is just something that I truly feel privileged to be a part of, as far as trying to turn around our race.
Mm. Wow, amazing, just amazing. Now, you said you used to be a police officer. Now, in my experience, you know, being inebriated and drunk a lot, you know, before I sobered up, I've seen a lot of, for lack of a better term, racism, especially to Native people. You know, granted, I was drunk, always drunk, when I encountered the police or the CSP, they call them, you know, Community Service Patrol, that would put you in the drunk tank, you know. When you were a police officer, did you ever encounter any of that, or situations where other officers were like that to, you know, Native people?
Yes. I was, I'm sorry for laughing, but in the beginning, obviously, I was just starting out, and it's something that often I saw. But because I was one of those very outspoken people, you know, I would call it out right on the spot. And it is something that, as I progressed in my policing career, I ended my career with a pretty decent position, and I was in charge of community relations. So I'd be that Inuk that the mayors would contact if there was some issues, the political people, whether it be corporations or whether it be the regional and or local politicians. I'd be that person, and I'd be the media relations between newspapers and whatnot as well. So I became very hyper aware that it was something that every community unfortunately had to deal with, and I was that person that would have to get involved and contact these police officers. I was also in charge of recruiting. So in my recruiting stages, it's something that often I wanted to nip at the butt before these young officers became officers within the communities, to talk about racism. And so there was a lot of pre-screening done beforehand. Mind you, we can never completely clean that from any surface, because it is something that that will be around for a long time. But yeah, definitely. I even got it from my own people, unfortunately, because of my mixed heritage. I was considered Alaq, which is a little Indian. And Khalunaq, which is a white person. You know, I have fair skin, and I guess live a certain way in my life that people, unfortunately, especially hurting people, pointed their chins up in that direction. Yeah. But no, it's unfortunately going to be around for a little while longer.
Yeah. It seems like you really want to help. You really want to, you know, help out in situations and stuff like that. But like you said, it's always going to be there. But just how can we make it better? You know, it's a hard subject. It's a hard subject.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that I think as much as we can, we have to get thicker skin.
Yeah.
Because violence never solves anything. Yeah. Communication is something that lacks profusely today. And I think we have to get that back. Being able to communicate, being able to educate, being able to say in a way where it doesn't make the other people feel uncomfortable. I think in that regard, when I'm saying the other people, I mean the fair skinned. We have to acknowledge that not everybody is racist, not everybody is a colonial, not everybody is out to continuously steal our land. It is already done. And I think it is important that we change the narrative within the kitchen tables across the world, if we can. And I often say one song at a time.
One song at a time. I like that. In your song, Who I Am, you opened with cursed with all the confidence, living for the compliments, all the drinking and the pain that I had up there on the stage. I was hiding behind all the words and all the memories. Do you ever think about who I was, who I am now? Man, that spoke so deeply to me. It made me tear up, you know? Because that I feel like that's me, you know, when I used to drink, and you know, who was I when I drank, and who am I now? It's just like strikingly different, you know. Mm-hmm. That spoke to me.
100%. I mean, that's a life of somebody that struggles with substance, and I think at the same time there is also a facade that we can also replace with the drinking, the lying, the faking, the amount of hurting that we all suffer with. Sometimes we hide that with other things, and music for me was kind of that as well in the beginning. And I had met my wife that summer. I was actually with my family back then, with my two kids, and she was we were part of a TV show for APTN, which is called TAM, Talent Adducto Musico, which means Indigenous Talent on the Aboriginal People's Television Network in Canada. I don't know if you get that feed over in Alaska, but we were part of that TV program, and it kind of it was a moment of feeling as though I had met my soulmate, and I was still in a relationship, and you know, it kind of tied into that song, you know, because I was still lying to myself, I was still drinking, I was still lying to my current family at the time, and it just, as we were finishing our album, we never really had any love songs in our previous albums, so I think that was the only song we actually recorded during the pandemic from beginning to end in our home studio. Everything else was done in recording studios that we worked with our producer in person. And when we recorded that one, it was very spontaneous. And it just kind of, as we're ending our year, that year before the pandemic, the lines just kind of resonated. I was writing in the songbook, and I wrote the whole song from beginning to end, and I sent it to my wife via Messenger, and she started crying because we wanted it a little bit more coming from the both of us. She changed around some of the sentences to make it more from her, because there's the other side, you know, coming from her perspective. And she also, you know, she's a recovering drug addict, and she's been sober for 14 years as well, and wow, going on 15. And so it's something that, you know, it kind of tied into both of us simultaneously and in parallel.
Man, hey, that song Human is epic, by the way. Can you tell us a little about it?
Back in 2019, at the beginning of We were going to be a part of the Folk Alliance International, which is a showcasing event that happens in Kansas City, usually. And when the president called us from, at the time, it wasn't the former president of the States, it was the president of Folk Alliance International. My wife usually tells this story, which is funny. She says, otherwise I would have hung up. But the president of the president of the Folk Alliance International ended up calling us, and he said, "We'd love for you two to be a part of the showcasing event in a much larger capacity, and we want to pair you up with UNESCO, and we want you to be the artists in residence." So we said, "What does that mean?" I was like, "Well, we pair you up with that corporation or that world organization, and you're gonna pick a theme." And right away, when they said UNESCO, we said language, culture, racism. We thought of right away the amount of stuff that our people have to go through, indigenous. The BIPOC community, us as the Eskimos, as we once were, the amount of violence we get as the marginalized community, the theme just kind of spoke for itself. So we said human, and one of the things that I say often after we sing that song is when I say Inuvung. Inuvunga, Inuit, Inuk. When I say Inuvunga, I'm saying I'm human. When I say Inuvunga, I'm saying I'm people. And when I say Inuvunga, and that's the most important one, I'm saying I am alive. Those three words in my language mean the same thing in three different words in English. And back before colonials came, we didn't have those kind of indications. We didn't have those kind of descriptions. We were just, let's say, the mountain people, the river people, the inlanders, and the fisher people. Mm. It is only in today's society we have separations, classes, politics, religion that separate us. And I think the theme ended up just growing from there. And we wanted it to be an anthem. We wanted it to be pride, you know, it's who you are, no matter where you come from. And the music video that we ended up shooting ended up being in black and white as well, because we needed it to be colorless. We needed it to be distinct in its own. We got flown to Paris, France, about a month later. And we got invited to the launch of the Year of Indigenous Languages, and they had invited people from all over the world, First People. We got to listen to the last dialect speakers in Australia within our brothers and sisters down there. The black people, and it was something that, you know, we felt very privileged, and we performed in front of essentially the world. And yeah, it's just one of those songs that even up to now it's still living.
Yeah, man, that video with the kids singing it brought chills and goosebumps to me. Mm-hmm. Man, that must make you guys feel so good, you know.
I mean, I think any space that we are given, it feels really good. When other people are singing our songs, we are just so honored. And, you know, I think as musicians or actors, why do we do it? Do we do it for validation? Is it because we're all kind of broken inside? And so every time we get that kind of validation, obviously it kind of really feels really good.
Where can everybody find you, like on social media and all of that?
Well, the easiest way is just kind of Google Twin Flames Music, Twin Flames in two separate words, and adding music, because it's one of those phenomenons that that will pop up before our music, and adding music just streamlines you to the music. And our website's twinflamesmusic.com, and we have all our socials included in there. Twin Flames Music, at Twin Flames Band is another contact on the other platforms, and we're all over. We have SoundCloud as well for people that obviously would rather not spend money. Spotify is something that obviously is a sin to a lot of people, especially musicians, because they don't pay very good, but and it also dumbs down the sound. You were talking about that earlier, about our sound being very, very different compared to the previous two, but it also makes a difference if you actually listen to the SoundCloud version, the Apple version, the Amazon version as well, which is probably the best quality, or our website also. If you still listen to CDs, we have all of those. We even have cassette tapes that are in the form of a cassette, but a USB key. We are able to mail out to whoever decides that they still want to be cool and listen to hard copies.
Yeah.
one day maybe we'll do vinyl, but it's the waiting period. The waiting period is insane for vinyl, and the amount of money that it costs to make vinyl. It's almost it's very expensive, and eight track maybe one day.
Reel to reel. Man, I'm so glad Beach just referred you to me.
Oh, nice. So my cousin, once upon a time when I picked up the guitar for the first time and I was 20 years old, I, obviously, with her brother, who was practically my brother too, had passed away. We did music for that year, and unfortunately, she moved away. I stopped music completely for 15 years, and she has done really well for herself. I'm really proud of her, and you know, it's something that I think we kind of started together way back when. I love her very much.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, Huyana, thank you so much for coming on this podcast and sharing, man. It was such a pleasure to have you. So, so good. Thank you, Yahi.
D'accord, mec.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Mondays at 9:30 a.m. and again repeating at 5:30 p.m. on 91.3 KIDE, Hoopa Tribal Radio, serving Hoopa, California. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.